You're listening to Issues and Ideas on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Jordan Bell. You may have heard the term campaign finance reform thrown around as candidates vying for the presidential bid present their campaign platforms. How political campaigns are financed is a topic some Democrats and some Republicans on a national scale are discussing, offering plans to reform. And on a local level, we're seeing this happen too. A group based on the Central Coast called Citizens Congress is working to see that campaign finance reform becomes a reality. Joining us today is someone who can tell us more about the topic, William Ostrander. He's the director of Citizens Congress. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
And we will say that you are running for California's 24th district congressional seat, but you're not here to talk about that today. Can you share a little bit about the proposed ordinance for campaign finance reform?
Yeah, certainly. I think at this point, most everybody recognizes that money is having a corruptive influence in politics. We've seen poll after poll above 85%, sometimes as high as 96%, where Americans are saying that they believe there's a corruptive influence of money in politics. And so the American people have a basic understanding of what that is, but I'm not sure that they always understand the connection between money in politics and legislative outcomes, and then the extension of that is how that affects their personal lives. But it's an enormous problem. It is most I think in many people's beliefs, it is the primary problem with our democracy today. It is the umbrella of all the other over the other problems. So global warming, immigration, tax policy, etc. Every subject down the road you can go, you have legislation that should be improved for the community's best interest. But when money plays a part in that, unfortunately, those legislative outcomes get skewed to whoever puts the most money towards the issue. And that's not just speculation. Gillins and Page have done a report studying over 40 years of legislative outcomes, 2,200 different bills. And what they found in their report is they said that majoritarian democracy, and this is a quote, has little to no effect on legislative outcomes. The single biggest determinant of legislative outcomes happens to be money, whether that's corporate money, union money, special interest money, wealthy individuals. It's money that's playing the biggest hand in that. That's why we're not seeing the traction in things that people feel strongly about. Comes, you know, again, global warming, nonpartisan issue, but we're not seeing the movement there in areas that we should have, and most likely, in many cases, it's because of the money.
Right. And so this is something, this you have an ordinance
yes.
for potentially the San Luis Obispo City Council race for 2016. Can you talk a bit about that and what function that would play in the race and the likelihood of it happening?
Yes. Our ordinance is called Integrity in Our Elections Ordinance. It basically consists of three parts: a public financing mechanism for candidates so that they are not dependent upon the wealthiest among us to fund their campaigns. Our basic saying is elections should depend on the voters, not the funders. And the second part of it is a disclosure mechanism, which requires that outside expenditures, when people come in from out of the area or when people want to give towards the promotion of a campaign or idea without directly letting the public know who they are, or if they want to give more money than what statutes would allow them to give, then they do it through what we call an independent expenditure. And sometimes they don't like to reveal who they are. Sometimes they don't mind. But that's money that comes into our area. So the second part of this ordinance is a disclosure mechanism, which requires people that come into the area and are here in the area and want to give towards an electioneering communication, a billboard, a door hanger, an advertisement, a postal thing through the mail. If they spend over $500, they have to register the city clerk's office so we know who it is. And that's a fundamental concept of fair elections. Eight out of the nine Supreme Court justices have advocated for more disclosure. The third part of it then happens to be a citizens' ethics panel, which is probably going to be comprised of about five people. The ethics panel basically will serve as an opportunity for the citizenry to hear complaints about election law violations, and they would do an expedited review of the concerns, take their recommendations, and in some sense, like the grand jury does to the city today, they would take that to the city attorney's office, and the city attorney's office would review the facts and the case and then decide from there whether they felt there was something more substantive that needed to go forward into some kind of a prosecution. Or they might, she might turn to say, or he might turn to say, thanks, but there's not enough here for us to worry about. So it's comprised of those three things. But the unique thing about our publicly funded elections portion of this ordinance is that we've developed a technique called democracy vouchers. Now, we're not the first. Seattle just passed, just about a week ago, their own measure with democracy vouchers. Ours is very similar to theirs, but if we do pass this ordinance, we'll be the second city in the country to do so. And democracy vouchers are essentially like a debit card, like a Starbucks card or, you know, a Home Depot card or something. The city clerk would mail these out to the registered voters of the city of San Luis Obispo, and it would be valued at about $20. What they would do with those then is they would redeem those with a candidate or candidates of their choice. So if they're in typical elections, there are two city council members and the mayor running every 2 years. Now, that usually means there's approximately six candidates. So that person who has that voucher could then donate to one candidate or to six candidates. The idea behind this is that right now the average city council candidate has about 53 donors towards her campaign. That's a very small percentage of total registered voters. It's less than a quarter of 1%. But by requiring them to go out and talk to constituents all over the city because they need to redeem their coupons with them, they put the candidate in a position to go out and talk to more people in the city rather than them having to go to the wealthiest among us to finance their campaigns.
Right. Okay. And so this money is directly from the city, and the public has access to it if you're registered to vote, and then you can use that for whoever you want. So everyone is getting – they're going to be pulling from the same sum of money, but it's going to be distributed based on public perspective.
You could say that, yeah. I mean, essentially, democracy vouchers are money that's taken from the general fund in the same way that we use to keep up our infrastructure, whether that's repairing public restrooms or filling potholes or taking care of bridges, et cetera, et cetera. This is part of our infrastructure to run our government. And so it's money that would be, in a sense, kind of like a tax rebate so that individuals have the opportunity to participate in elections and stop the idea, or perhaps change the idea, that only the wealthy have an influence or a say in our elections or in who our candidates are.
Mm-hmm. And why the threshold of like $500? Where does that number come from?
Oh, for the disclosure?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Well, part of the challenge for our ordinance is that we have to tailor it to the size of our city.
Okay.
So you have public financing in Los Angeles, New York, Seattle, Arizona, Connecticut, Maine. There are about 24 to 28 states around the country that have some form of public financing. But every one of them has a different scale. So, for example, we don't want to write redundant type of laws into our ordinance. And in California, the Fair Political Practices Commission already has a statute that requires people to spend over $50,000 to register with the state. And then that information is available on the Secretary of State or the state, recorder, I forget which website it is, but it's on the website so that people can access that and find out who's giving that money. But you can't really do that in San Luis Obispo, right? We had $50,000 threshold. Well, the candidates don't spend $50,000 for their campaigns. So we had to set that threshold low enough so that people who did want to come in and influence the outcomes of our elections would be required to register. So $500 was a number that we picked because after studying how much it costs to send out mailers through the post office, and what it costs to put out door hangers, we felt this was a reasonable number where people would have to step up and say, okay, this is who I am and this is what we're doing to express ourselves in this election.
Mm-hmm. So besides proximity to San Luis Obispo, are there any other reasons that make this particular council race a good, I suppose, first run at this, a good experiment for this sort of implementation of this ordinance?
Well, some of it is experimentation. I mean, in the sense of having San Luis Obispo learn how to do this. I mean, there's a certain level of experimenting in that. But let's remember that public financing has been around for a long, long time, and disclosure laws have been as well, and ethics panels. Unfortunately, at the highest levels, like the FEC, we have an inbred dysfunction, a purposely dysfunctional organization, so that any sort of malfeasance in our election laws are not truly investigated, because it requires a vote of four on a panel of six, and three are Republicans and three are Democrats. So they never get the majority that they need to investigate things. And when they do, they're usually quite glaring, and there's about a 2 to 3 year wait before they investigate things. So citizens' ethics panels are ways that the citizenry can get involved in this process, and we can expedite matters, and it doesn't become partisan. So from our point of view, this isn't a huge experiment. Mm-hmm. This is trying to make sure we work out the bugs and scale it down for San Luis Obispo, but we don't see it as particularly huge. San Luis Obispo has been very progressive throughout the years. Of course, we've been first in the no smoking ordinances, very much a leader in plastic bags, et cetera, et cetera. We've had a progressive city council. They recognize the influence of money in politics, even though we haven't had any glaring issues of corruption. They still recognize the value of this, of spreading the opportunity to be represented in Congress, in city council, or to be a representative themselves in the city council. Now, they don't have to stop and think, how many wealthy friends do I have? What is my checkbook like? Can I afford to run for office? They now have the ability to step up. If they have good ideas, people should support them and put them there without the obstruction of money.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would you say are the largest barriers to implementation for something like this?
Well, there is going to be a certain amount of education time that we need to put in to help the constituents understand how these things work and why they have a value, and, for example, why the city budget money should be used for democracy vouchers rather than putting in lights for a tennis court, for example, which is something that I know the people of San Luis Obispo have wanted for a long time. We need to look at it and put it in perspective like that. I think that might be some of the difficulty or the challenge. Also, we're trying to get this implemented as quickly as possible, and city council usually puts out two-year budgets. Now, we're ahead in terms of our budget projections about how much money we're taking in. So there's money there if they choose to find it, and I think we have a very strong chance of making that happen. We've passed one city council vote already. Staff is in review of it. We've had a great meeting with our city manager and city attorney's office and the city clerk's office. We've tried to find out what questions they might have that we could help them with, and we're coming back for a vote on January 19th before city council. It's a Tuesday night, 6 o'clock, and we really, really, really would love to have more people show up to help support this ordinance. And at that point, I think city staff will be able to give city council a report on what it means to implement this. And they will have some idea of maybe what some of those hurdles will be for us as a city. But for the most part, this is not brain surgery, and it's not something that we're reinventing the wheel on. We can do this.
Mm-hmm. As a citizen or a member of the public, if this was in place during the next election,
right,
what would I expect to see? You know, what would I expect to see that deviates from the norm?
Well, in the norm, a candidate can't announce until approximately 123 days before the election. So around July 1st, mm-hmm, candidates would be making their announcement that they're going to run. In the next particular election, if this were to be in place, the city council will have to decide whether or not they need any more advance notice than that. But candidates would have to announce their run. People would be sent their democracy vouchers. And then the candidates will have to sort of figure out new ways of campaigning, whether that's door-to-door, whether it's house parties. They need to get out and speak to the average constituents. You must realize that there are about 20 or 30 families in the city of San Luis Obispo that consistently support candidates running for city council. The number of people that actually participate in the funding of our elections is very, very small. So this is going to spread the candidates' attention out to greater numbers of people. So I would expect that you would see a greater number of public forums where candidates can actually talk about their issues. We may see more debating, et cetera, et cetera, something very important. In the future, what I think you'll see is that there'll be people that you might be coworkers with that you never thought might actually run for politics because they're like you. They're just next to you doing their average job. Mm-hmm. But now, because we take away the enormous difficulty, challenge of coming up with money for the election, as long as they qualify, having the right number of signatures, et cetera, then they too can run for office. And you might see more of your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends, your family that actually go out and participate in city politics. When you think about city of San Luis Obispo, we have five sitting council members, and pretty much, well, four out of the five of them are, I'm going to guess, above the age of 55 or 60 years of age. One is below 40. If you look at the demographics of the city of San Luis Obispo, something like 60% of the city is under the age of 40. So they're underrepresented. So I would expect to see in future elections that you might see a younger, a more younger clients, and maybe even some minority candidates running for office.
So it's like, you know, the focus is then to have support from the public, but not necessarily in a monetary amount. You know, it's, you can get support in terms of signatures and stuff, but it doesn't have to always come in the form of money.
You know, you'd be surprised that less than 10% of Americans have ever donated to any kind of political race. Less than 10%. And when you look just in the presidential races right now, we're going through what they essentially call the invisible primary. The invisible primary suggests that whoever is the successful ones will be able to go out and attract the wealthiest among us, the billionaires and the multimillionaires. And we saw in New York Times report just a few weeks ago that over half of the money that's coming into the presidential races so far has come from just 158 families. Out of a country of about 315 million, that's a scarily small percentage, because that skews the discourse that we're having about what are our important issues, what's going to advance us as a country and our communities. And that same dynamic sort of works on this very small local level as well.
Okay. And so what I'm wondering is if that sort of the percentage of folks you're seeing in a town like San Luis Obispo who are actually donating to campaigns, is that very similar to what we're seeing on a national level? Is it kind of like the same numbers?
Yes, as a percentage, yes.
Okay.
And when we look at those numbers, they're usually less than 1% of who's getting involved. I mean, for example, in people that tend to give to elections at the federal level, we're talking about less than 0.5% that give over $200. That's a really, 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 really small percentage of our population. And I heard a statistic recently, which is pretty scary too. In the presidential primaries going on right now, when they look at the area codes across the United States, all the area codes in the country combined of African-American contributors don't equal the amount of just two zip codes in Manhattan for whites. So what we've seen is a lot of minorities don't feel like they have an opportunity to participate in our election.
So do you feel like this system is scalable to a federal level?
Absolutely. I mean, we already have this at the presidential level. I mean, I think during the 1950s, they came up with a process to fund the presidential campaigns. But unfortunately, because the amount of money required in elections is quite large, and there are some people that have an advantage in doing that, they've refused to raise the amount of money that the presidential candidates have to work with. It's about $300 million. And if you look at the 2012 elections for the president, each of those candidates spend above $1 billion, $1.1 and $1.2 billion between the two candidates. Each spent that much, I mean. So we have the systems in place. There are 12 bills before Congress right now. One of them, Government by the People Act by John Sarbanes, has been there session after session. It has about 165 co-sponsors in the House. They can't get it out of the committee because at this moment, the Republicans are doing a far better job of raising private money than are the Democrats. And so right now the Republicans are in control and the Republicans head the committees. So they choose as to what legislation comes out of committee and comes up for a vote. And that's not one that they want to come out of the committee. When you go back to that number of 158 families that have contributed half of the wealth to our presidential campaigns right now, 138 of them have given to Republicans' causes. So right now they don't seem to be of an interest to change the current money system.
Will you remind our listeners again where this ordinance stands and the next meeting in San Luis Obispo?
Yeah, of course. We passed our first vote 3-2 in the city of San Luis Obispo about a month ago, a little bit more than a month ago. And what we got passed was the city council was willing to ask the staff to review our ordinance and figure out what it meant to the city mechanically, physically, and, you know, just managerially what they had to do. We've had a terrific meeting with the city manager, Ms. Lichtig, and the city attorney's office and clerk. And they're right now in the process of answering many of those questions. How much will it cost? Do we need more manpower? How many days in advance will we need to do this? What's the company going to charge me to produce these debit cards, for example, et cetera, et cetera. They're doing all that kind of research and seeing how other cities are implementing their own public financing programs around the country, New York, L.A., San Francisco, San Diego, Las Cruces, New Mexico, I mean, et cetera, Richmond, California. And then they'll come back to city council with a report on January the 19th. And on that date, the city council will most likely to have another vote in which decide to ask staff to go further with their research and to come forward with something that they can vote on as a yes or no, as this is, we're going to vote for this ordinance or not. So that requires essentially further study. Now, that's my guess. I don't think they're going to be able to come back with a fully rendered ordinance that they're going to vote up or down on. But what's really, really important is the city of San Luis Obispo residents and others around the community. Don't limit yourself if you're not a resident of San Luis Obispo. Even if you're in the outlying area, this is something that needs to spread to the county and to other communities around, Santa Barbara County, et cetera. We need people to show up and come to city council and make them understand how important this issue is for us. We know it in every poll. Now we need people to step up and support it. So if you're available on January the 19th at 6 o'clock, please come down to the city council meeting at City Hall in San Luis Obispo and support this ordinance. It's very important.
William Ostrander is the director of Citizens Congress. Thank you for joining us today on Issues and Ideas.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.